But as I prepared this passage, I was struck that how much during our daily lives we're asked to put our faith and hope in so many things. If you watch as much television as I do, you'll know that sometimes those things can be objects. I recently saw an advert for a new car on the market. There were the usual pictures of it swishing around a mountain track. And then the tagline came, "A car you can believe in." So we're asked to put our faith in objects. But most often, I guess, we're asked to put our faith in people, in doctors, in politicians, in the technical help desk when the document that we've been working on suddenly disappears from the screen in front of us. The people of the fictional city of Metropolis are asked to put their faith in someone. They're asked to put their faith in a man who can rid their city of evil and the resulting crime and fear. I wonder for this prize, chocolate bar, you'll be glad to hear it's not Cadbury's. I wonder if anyone can tell me who that person might be. Do shout it out, yes. Superman, exactly so, catch. There he is, another Superman there on the second row. Well done, Paul. Yes, Superman, the latest film opens on the 14th of July, Superman Returns. That's across cinemas in the UK. And the people of Metropolis are told to put their trust in Superman, and they're told two important things about him. The first is that he's faster than a speeding bullet. The second is that he's able to jump tall buildings in a single stride. Well, two pretty useful things if you're going to rid a city of evil. But that's what happens, isn't it? When we're told to put our faith and trust in people, we're told things about them. Those are the conversations that happen. I thought of some examples in my working life at the BBC. Often hear phrases like this. "Well, we'd never use anyone but Pete to vision mix problems in the park. He knows exactly what it should look like. Mel is so efficient. She's the sort of person you only need to ask her to do something once. Oh, you'll love working for Lorna," they say. "She knows so much about the UK music scene." So we're told to put our trust in people, and we're given reasons for doing that. Well, that's exactly what's happening in this letter, in these verses of Colossians 1, 15 to 23. Paul is reminding the young Christian church in Colossae about the people, about the person that they've set their faith in as Christians, Jesus Christ. And he does it by focusing on four characteristics of Jesus. You'll see those on the notes on the back of your sheets, so you can follow those as you go. Now, I've been a Christian for a few years, but I was struck completely afresh by these things. They really blew my mind as I went through them. So there's some gaps there, and if anything particularly strikes you, do scribble it down and look over it over the week. Well, let's get into the first of those characteristics then. And we see it as we begin to read. Paul states the first characteristic in verse 15, that Jesus is the image of the invisible God. Now, the Bible tells us that God is invisible. We're told in John 1 and verse 18, "No one has ever seen God." Yesterday on the Today program on Radio 4, there was a professor speaking about the fact that he knew that God didn't exist, and he knew it because no one had ever seen God. It was in a little piece just before the 9 o'clock news. Well, that's the question, isn't it? Does the fact that God is invisible to us mean that we can never know what he's like? Well, no, Paul is saying. In verse 15, he's saying Jesus Christ is the visible image of the invisible God, the living embodiment. We don't need to guess or speculate or invent or dream. To know God, to know his character, we just need to look at Jesus. It's a great truth. You know, we sometimes can be tempted to think that we only get a hint of the greatness of God in Jesus, a flavour, a taste, that Jesus is a scaled-down version of the mighty God. Well, if you read on a little further, you'll see in verse 19 that Paul is saying something completely different. Read that with me. "For God was pleased to have his fullness dwell in him." The full greatness of God, 100%, has been revealed in total in the person of Jesus Christ. So as Paul builds up and reminds the church in Colossae of who they've put their faith in, as he begins to build up this picture, we see firstly that Jesus Christ is the 100% full image of God. Secondly, we see that Paul reminds those early Christians of how that Jesus, you'll see that in the second part of verse 15, was the firstborn over all creation. For those who are tempted to think of Jesus as simply a good man, part of creation, perhaps the firstborn of creation instead of Adam, Paul is making an important reminder here. Look at the language. Paul is reminding us of something quite different. Not that Jesus was part of creation, but he was the author of creation. And we see how that is in verse 16. Let me read that. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. Again, it's another amazing truth. Jesus was present at creation, not a created being as Adam and Eve, but present before and at creation. So as we go through these four characteristics, we see as Christians, we can take great confidence in the picture Paul is building, that God through his invisibility, he was revealed through the visible Jesus, that through Jesus, the whole of creation in all of its splendor became a reality. Well, thirdly, we're told about the relationship that Jesus has with us through his church, and you'll see that in verse 18. And he is the head of the body, the church. We might be tempted to think that the church is a very human invention, particularly when we're made aware of the disagreements and the disunity in the church. For those of us here today, and I guess that's most of us who call ourselves Christians, it can frankly make us lose heart, can't it? Sometimes when we look at the state of the church, we can get just a little depressed. Well, if that's you, and I know it is me, these words are a wonderful reminder, aren't they? Jesus, God in his fullness, the author of creation, is the head of the church. We haven't been left without a head, it's Jesus. Well, I found this really exciting. It gave me great confidence in what the church can achieve in this world. Jesus is the head of the church. It reminded me of the time that Greg Dyke took over as the Director General of the BBC. There was a huge wave of excitement, enthusiasm, confidence. People were really proud to work for the BBC. Yeah, we got Greg Dyke in charge. I know for friends who are at Royal Mail, it was the same when Alan Layton took over as chairman. You know, the Royal Mail was being pillared in the press almost every day. And there, the man that was responsible for turning Asda round, making Asda this amazing success, suddenly he was the new chairman. And again, staff talked about a huge surge of confidence. People suddenly wanted to start working for the Royal Mail again, instead of leaving. But it's a great truth for us to hold on to, isn't it? That as Christians, the head of the church is Jesus. Well, fourthly and finally, Paul talks about the relationship that Jesus has with us. And so we get it in context. Paul reminds his readers, and of course he's reminding us, of their and our state. You'll see that in verse 21. Let me read that. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. Well, the picture here is a powerful one, isn't it? Of us as enemies of God. It's a very strong word. But why enemies? Well, it's because of God's utter rejection of evil, his complete aversion to sin. Such was God's hatred of sin and evil in every form that there could be no compromise. And it's a great thing that with God there is no compromise to sin. And when sin gets into our lives, it makes us enemies of him. Such is the lack of compromise that we become enemies. But in verse 22, we of course get onto the great news of the gospel. But now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. You see, hell will be a place with no sin at all. There will be no compromise. And therefore, us, however good we think we are, there can be no place for us in heaven if it is a place without sin. There we see that with Jesus, the fullness of God in human form, the author of all creation in its splendor, the head of the church, it's that person who cared so much about you and me that he paid the price that was needed so that we, unacceptable to God, through our sinfulness, may be reconciled to him. Well, as we've looked at these four amazing characteristics, as we've been reminded of them, I hope they've excited you. I hope some of them have struck you as new. They're great things to put our hope and confidence in as Christians. And as I finish, I want to consider what these might mean for us as we go back to our working afternoons. I want us to consider that, whether we're here and we call ourselves Christians this afternoon, or if we're here and we don't call ourselves Christians. Well, as Christians, we can look at what this means for us by reading verse 23. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel. Well, the question is, as Christians here today, how can we be moved on from the hope held out in the gospel? Remember, our series is called True Fulfillment. I want you just to read one verse that's in Colossians 2. You'll see that in verse 9. Colossians 2, verse 9. For in Christ all the fullness of the deity lives in bodily form. For in Christ all the fullness of the deity lives in bodily form. It's just another way of saying what this passage is saying. But Paul had written this letter to some people who called themselves Christians but didn't really believe this. There were people who called themselves Christians but didn't actually believe that Jesus Christ was God in all his fullness. And something was happening that was beginning to downgrade Jesus. It was beginning to make that man fit in with all the other beliefs. You see, the unique claims that Paul sets out, those four characteristics, they have no room for other beliefs. It's a reminder of Jesus only. We had another reminder in the song we sang. We sang the words, Jesus my Redeemer, name above all names. Well, this would have been incredibly unfashionable language to many people in the city of Colossae 2,000 years ago. And it is for us now. You know, we live in a time and in a world of no absolutes when it comes to faith. At the Queen's recent birthday celebrations at St. Paul's Cathedral, there on the front row, I wonder whether you saw any of the pictures, were all the leaders of all the major faiths, all lined up on the front row. They were dressed very differently, of course, and it made a very powerful photo. It made it onto the front page of a lot of the newspapers. There they were, shoulder to shoulder. You see, much better in our day to describe Christianity, the belief in the person of Jesus Christ, not in terms of absolutes and supremacy at the exclusion of other faiths and beliefs, but to put him alongside all the other faiths, to describe him more gently as a good man, a great teacher, a man who did great things. You know, we certainly wouldn't want to describe him as the physical embodiment of the one and only God. But when we're reminded of these four characteristics in this letter by Paul, we can't have Jesus standing in the line. The picture here is Jesus not in the line, but above the line, over everything. You know, the picture is of us in the line and Jesus over everything. So for those of us here this afternoon who call ourselves Christians, Paul is urging us to have the right picture of Jesus, not to downgrade him, to remember these four characteristics. J.I. Packer said, to have a pygmy view of Jesus will give you a pygmy faith. Well, you might be here and you may not call yourself a Christian. Well, a few years ago I investigated these claims for the first time. I did it on a course similar to Christianity Explored that's run here at All Souls. And for the first time ever, I investigated these truths. As we finish reading the passage in the second part of verse 23, it says this. This is the gospel that you have heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven and of which I, Paul, have become a servant. Well, it's when I heard this that I became a Christian. When I heard these, I put my faith and my hope in the person Jesus Christ. And I guess my question for you is, have you heard it? Have you made the opportunity to hear these claims, to investigate them? Because that's what the word, the gospel, means. It's about these claims that God revealed himself fully in the person of Jesus Christ. That Jesus Christ was before and the author of creation, that he's head of the church, and that he came to earth and went willingly to the cross to take the punishment that's due to all of us. Well, there's lots of ways that you can investigate, and you'll know many of them. There are great books that you can get. There are courses that you can go on. There's one run here at All Souls called Christianity Explored. We run it at lunchtime. We run it in the evening. But of course, you can speak to Jago or myself afterwards if you'd like to know more about how you might investigate those claims. Well, in either case, I hope that Paul's reminder of who Jesus really is, those four characteristics, have been helpful to you this Thursday lunchtime. Thanks for listening.